Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode 152 with Kwame Christian. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Kwame Christian, we explore a number of interesting topics like three skills every negotiation needs to be successful, are you faking or feeling empathy, and the path of least resistance often leads to more resistance down the road. Today's podcast upgrade is 7 tips for better negotiation. You can download it at betterleadersbetterschools.com/152-Kwame-Christian or click the podcast upgrade link in the show notes page. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving students' soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Are you attending the Mastery Leadership Institute this summer in Salt Lake City? You know, educators are great. They're great at collecting data. But how do your teachers use that data in real time? Learn how to stop just collecting data and to start using it at the Mastery Leadership Institute. Learn more about this event, including the locations and dates at masteryconnect.com/MLI. That's masteryconnect.com/MLI. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I am joined today by Kwame Christian. I met Kwame at the podcast movement in California. What was that? 2017. And I got ripped from that conference because Hurricane Harvey was on its way to decimate Houston. And we were supposed to move to Belgium. And I had to meet up with my wife. And it was just a very stressful time. But I met this guy in the conference and just immediately was drawn to him and knew that he would be such a great guest for the show. And that's because Kwame's a business lawyer and the director of the American Negotiation Institute. In this role, he conducts live negotiation and conflict resolution training sessions for organizations. Kwame's TEDx talk, Finding Confidence in Conflict, was viewed over 24,000 times in less than 24 hours and was the most popular TEDx talk of conflict in 2017. Kwame hosts the podcast Negotiate Anything, where he interviews successful professionals and shares powerful persuasion techniques. With over 200,000 downloads and listeners in 140 countries, it's the top-ranked negotiation and dispute resolution podcast in the nation. Kwame is the proud husband of Dr. Whitney Christian and father of Kai Christian. Kwame, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Danny.
Man, it's the least I could do. You had me on Negotiate Anything, the podcast. I was nervous, sweating bullets, especially for that sparring session that comes up as a follow-up for all your podcasts. And listeners, too, listen, Kwame has a great podcast. I'll link up the show that we did together in the show notes as well. But so glad to have you here. I'm curious, let's start at the beginning. What sparked that interest in negotiation?
I realized that my entire life was a negotiation, and that's how I started to get into it.
Okay.
I grew up in a small town called Tiffin, Ohio, and I'm a Caribbean American. So when I was young, I had a very strong Caribbean accent, and I was one of the only minorities there. So I was very, very different. And so from a young age, I was constantly negotiating friendship and acceptance. And when I got to undergrad at Ohio State, I really found an interest in psychology because I found human cognition fascinating and human interaction fascinating. And so fast forward to law school, I got my JD and got a Master of Public Policy, and I discovered negotiation. And negotiation was really interesting to me because it allowed us to take what I've learned from psychology and use it for a business or a legal purpose. And so I fell in love. It turned out OSU had the top-ranked dispute resolution program in the country, and they had this negotiation competition where you have a fictional client and you represent that client, and there are other law students on the other side, and they're doing the same thing. And I was like, that sounds pretty cool. Let's go ahead and do
yeah.
this. And so my partner and I, we participated, and it turned out we did well enough to win the competition. And then that allowed us to represent the school school at region competition in Ottawa, Ontario. And then we won that competition as well. And then we made it to the national semifinals in New Orleans, Louisiana. And so after that, I was just hooked. I couldn't get enough. And that's how I ended up here doing this work.
Love that recap. And often when I'm interviewing folks that are in a local school and leading, I ask them about three skills that school leaders need to have to be successful. But since you're the resident expert on negotiation, what would you consider three skills that every successful negotiator needs?
First of all, I know this is going to sound like a truism, but the ability to listen is number one. Number two would be the ability to ask great open-ended questions. And the next one is the willingness to be patient and empathize with the other side. And I think a lot of times when we think about persuasion, it's something that we want to almost impose on somebody else. I remember one time I was doing a training session on negotiation, and I asked people, what's your goal? What do you want to learn here? And somebody says, I want to learn how to impose my will on others. I was like,
Were you training Darth Vader? Who was that?
Right. I was like, stop the session. We're done. You know, but think about it from the other side. Does anybody want to feel as though somebody imposed their will on you? No, nobody wants to feel that way. And persuasion is most effective when it's subtle, when you don't feel it. Sometimes it's a counterintuitive approach, but those are the three things that I think are most important.
No, I really appreciate that. And I'm curious, I'm always really interested in this idea of empathy. And a lot of people talk about it, but not too many people really understand like how to actually demonstrate it. And then in a high stakes situation as a negotiation, how do you demonstrate that empathy?
Yeah. And I think what people end up often doing is faking it. But what you really need to do is actually feel it. One of the things that you can do in order to empathize effectively is first suspend your agenda. We focus so much on what we want all the time, but we need to really take the time to say, okay, let me put what I want on the back burner and focus entirely on you at this point. And building trust is an important part of the process. You need to take the time to build trust and build rapport with the person. And if somebody feels as though this conversation and your empathy is simply a means to an end, they're not going to be willing to move because they don't feel as though you truly care, and you don't, because you're going through this in a mechanical kind of way. Mm. You genuinely need to care about the other person. One of the things that I do is I mediate at the courthouse, and it's fascinating to see the two parties. And what we do when we mediate is we found that when you put the two parties in the room together, it can become explosive. You don't want that to happen. So we just do shuttle
scenes. I've seen it.
Exactly. We've all seen that. Yeah, it's not pretty. Not pretty at all. So we do shuttle diplomacy where we have the parties in both rooms, in separate rooms, and then we go back and forth. And one of the skills that I've had to develop was almost instant empathy, where you have one side and the other, they're crying in front of you because of this situation. And then you go to the other room and the other side is just not buying it. And they're just like, yeah, they're just cheap. Don't buy those tears, blah, blah, blah. And then I need to connect and empathize with their point of view at the same time. It's tough. But I think one thing that helps me is the fact that I have a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
And when people are really frustrated, it's almost like they devolve into a toddler. Yeah. And so I have my 2-year-old, and he wakes up in the morning and he looks at me and he says, I want mommy. I was like, mommy's at work. And then he starts crying. I can't get frustrated. I need to actually lean into that emotion and say, you really love mommy, don't you? Yeah, I love mommy. You want to play with mommy, don't you? Yeah. And so it's counterintuitive, because what you do is you lean into the emotion and allow them to share it with you instead of immediately starting to counter and impose your will on them when they're not ready.
Yeah, I was curious. I wanted to hear what Kai, you know, melts down about. Was it the bath at night, or I guess when he wakes up and mom's not home and he wants mommy, you know? So that's where the meltdown occurs. And I like what you did there too. You know, on the podcast we recorded together, we talked about never split the difference. And it sounds like, you know, part of empathy is labeling what you think other people are going through, right? So you really love mommy, you really miss mommy, and that kind of thing. And just being able to label and correctly label where people are at. And if you're wrong, then listen to, you know, their response and relabel so that it's accurate. That goes a long, long way in building trust and empathy, I think.
Absolutely. What you need to do is you need to be able to acknowledge the feelings without agreeing with the position. It's a tightrope that is difficult at first, but once you start doing it and intentionally starting to practice it in your personal life, it makes it a lot easier to do it in your professional life. Because going back to the example with my baby, Kai, when he says, "I want mommy," it doesn't do me any good to agree with him and say, "Yeah, absolutely. Let's get mommy. Let's go to work right now. Go to the hospital and find your mother."
Yeah.
No, that doesn't do any good. But I need to acknowledge that those feelings are legitimate. Even if there is a barrier to giving the person what they want, which might be something that you want or something legitimate like mommy's not here, or we simply cannot give you what you want in this situation, we can still give them what they want on an emotional level, which is the acknowledgement that their feelings are legitimate.
My name is Jennifer Krong from the Assist Learning Podcast. I'm a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
So running the American Negotiation Institute, you've had to build some routines and rituals that I'm sure will help you have an impactful day. So can you share some of those things that you do to set yourself up for success?
For me, it really starts in the morning. Well, actually, it starts at night, the night before. I am a big believer in momentum, and I know that if I have a productive morning, it flows well into the rest of the day. And so I make sure that I try to make sure that my bags are packed and everything is set the night before. So the morning goes really smoothly. I go to the gym, get to the gym about 5:30, shower up, come back home, pick up Kai, go to daycare, and then go to work. And what I do at work is I start off with a pretty regimented routine. Start off with a 5-minute meditation, and then I review my task list, and then I move the task list over to the things that I need to do for the day. And since I'm a recovering attorney, I put my day into a timesheet. And so I have my day broken up into 15-minute increments where I say, okay, from this time to this time, I'm doing this. This time to this time, I'm doing that. And I actually set timers throughout the day to make sure I'm staying on point, not getting all up in my head, because I can spend a disproportionate amount of time in the strategy creation stage, right, just almost daydreaming and not executing. And so being really regimented and strict with my time helps me to stay on task throughout the day.
So is that not necessarily a fear, but is that just like putting off work to, you know, you have to be active, right? You have to execute. And if you do just strategize the whole day, but get nothing done, you know, I'm curious what motivates that.
Yeah, I realize that for me, at least, perfectionism is a form of procrastination. And so I'll sit there and try to analyze and think through an entire problem from start to finish, trying to stay multiple steps ahead. But the thing is, you get so much intel from execution that it just, the strategy creation phase, I think, is, at least for me, is a little bit blown out of proportion. It's like, okay, Kwame, you have this great idea. Let's execute. Get some information, re-strategize, and execute again. I feel as though sometimes I forget that the execution portion is a critical element in success. I can't just sit here and think and daydream myself to success. And so focusing so heavily on the time restrictions actually makes me, forces me to be more creative. It's like I need to bring this idea to a conclusion within, I don't know, maybe it's something simple and it's 10 to 15 minutes, or something a bit more complex, 1 to 2 hours. But I need to take it from paper to execution quickly, because I know that sometimes I can just do this until the opportunity passes.
Right.
And then really all I've done is intellectual stimulation without any real execution or creation.
Yeah, I generate that sense of urgency when I'm facilitating my productivity class, and that's taking, instead of making goals for a year, because you can push it off, I'll get to it next month, next month, next month. It's then creating urgency by compacting it into a 3-month or 12-week plan. So I do some similar in that sense to, I guess, encourage execution and definitely, you know, add some urgency to the work that I'm doing. So to-do lists, are you paper and pen type of guy? Are you using an app?
Yeah, I use an app. I use Wunderlist for my daily routines. So things that I need to do at night, every night, things that I need to do in the morning, every morning, I go to Wunderlist for that. As I'm navigating the day, sometimes an idea comes to me and I'll just use the iPhone reminder. And so that's why when I'm starting the day, I do the 5-minute meditation. And then the next thing I do is I take the list, the ideas from the reminder app and put it into Trello.
Gotcha.
And Trello is where I have like my action items for the day, for like the work day. And the good thing is a lot of times when I have these random ideas, sometimes I don't need to do these things. You know, they're things that I realize after letting it sit for a day is like, oh, that's something I really don't need to do. But putting it in the reminder at least gets it out of my head at that time. And it allows me to focus on what I'm currently doing. But then I try to be very strategic about the tasks that I need to do, because sometimes just because it came to mind doesn't mean that it gets me anywhere.
And then the workout, 5:30, you're heading off to the gym. What do you do at the gym? What do you enjoy?
I like lifting. That's my bread and butter there. Really, it started out of pure vanity because I had...
Me too.
Yeah, I had the TED Talk coming up and I said, oh, I need to, get a shape and look good for this. And so it was the first time that I actually intentionally blended diet and exercise, being very strict with the diet, being very strict with the exercise. And I liked the results. And so I said, no, I'm going to keep doing this. And so what I do now is I look at it more from an intellectual perspective than a physical perspective. I go out there trying to work out my mind. And so the idea is that when it comes to physical exertion, your body will try to protect itself when it encounters pain. I believe it's called Golgi fibers. They're nerve endings in your muscles, and they will tell you, oh, you feel that burn, you're about to hurt yourself, pull back. And so that feeling usually comes at about 40 to 50%. But the thing is, when you're working out correctly, you'll feel that burn. But since you're working out correctly, moving beyond that burn won't cause physical damage. It'll cause the muscle tears that you need to grow muscle. And so my goal is to continue to work out beyond exhaustion, beyond what I think I can do. And the reason being is because I've noticed that it increases my willpower. Mm-hmm. And so in the gym, I'm constantly saying, okay, Kwame, you want to stop at 3? That means you can probably get 8 to 10. And then I do it. And so I keep telling myself, one more rep, one more rep, one more rep. And now during the day, towards the end of the day, when I get tired and there are these annoying little administrative tasks that I need to do, I have that same one rep mentality. Just one more email. Just edit this podcast a little bit more, make that last call, those type of things. And it allows me to push further during the work day as well. So I go through the day, I go to the gym with the intention of working out my mind more so than working out my body.
Love that one more rep mentality. I think that's definitely that's something that every leader could benefit from if they, you know, put that into their skill set. So we talked about routines and rituals. I'm also very interested in terms of how we wind down our days. And so do you unplug from work? And if so, how? And if you don't unplug, why not?
There's a right answer and then there's the truth. I don't know what to say.
The truth. That's what we want.
So I try to get to bed by about 10. That's my goal. There are a few variables that have been added to my life that make that a bit difficult at times. Variable number one is the 2-year-old. You know, sometimes we have plans and babies laugh. And so that's one of the things. So I try to get him into bed at a reasonable time, at least by between 8 and 8:30. And then after that, in order to have a successful morning, I need to then immediately start working on getting my bags set, my lunch packed for me and my wife, and everything prepared for the next day. The thing is that since I've been going since 5:30 a.m., to now it's 8:30. I'm pretty tired. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping I can get that one rep mentality to last me till 8:30. Because what ends up happening oftentimes is I finally get the baby down to sleep and I wind him down. You read him the story and then you hold him, then you put him down. So you wind down in that process. And then I go and sit on the couch and then it becomes like 9:30. And I said, oh no, I need to put my stuff away. And so then there's a little bit of a ramp up and then I go to sleep after that. So really what I should do is make it so that as soon as I put the baby down, getting my things ready, and then I could have wind down time from 9 to 10. That happens occasionally, but that's going to be one of the things that I'm going to be more intentional about, because every day there are points in your day where I consider them inflection points. It's like these are points where you can either kind of make or break your day, where you can really change the level of success you have for that day. And I think that 8:30 to 9 time period where I try to calm down, I think that's detrimental, because if I just hold on for a half hour more, I could get that work down and have a legitimate time to calm down from 9 to 10.
One of my favorite quotes of all times from Derek Sivers, and he says, "What's ordinary to you is extraordinary to me." Kwame, what do you consider your superpower?
Oh my superpower. I would say my willingness to learn. I think most people would assume that I would say something like persuasion and conflict resolution. But the thing is, I was really bad at this. And that's why I'm passionate about teaching other people, because I feel as the best parts of our lives, the best things that we can attain, often lie on the other side of conflict. And if I can help people to get there through these trainings and coaching, that's, I've done my part. But the reason I was able to get to this point where I'm actually good at negotiation and conflict resolution is because I took the time to improve. And so each year, my goal is to read at least 52 books a year. Last year, it was about 55. And I'm just constantly learning and learning and learning and trying to become better at these things. Even things that I know, things that I don't know, I want to improve. And so my goal is to feel stupid at least once a day. And I do that by getting into a really good book and then saying to myself, how did I live without knowing this? Yeah, so I think that's my superpower, my willingness to learn.
Hey, Danny Sunshine here, and I'd like to tell you a little more about the Mastery Leadership Institute taking place this summer in Salt Lake City. This event is an intensive 3-day professional development retreat facilitated by nationally recognized principals. Educators will be immersed in full-day workshops focused on strategies to effectively use data to target interventions, personalize learning, and evaluate instructional efficacy. True school transformation is only possible when educators are empowered to use the data they collect to immediately impact teaching and learning. Learn more about the Mastery Leadership Institute, including upcoming dates and locations, at masteryconnect.com/MLI. That's masteryconnect.com/MLI. So you read 55 books in 2017. What is the number one book from that list you would recommend to school leaders listening today?
I think the one that, and I think we might be in the same accord here, 12-Week Year was a fantastic book. And that's really the book that got me focused on execution. One of the quotes from the book was, there's the life we are living, and then there's the life that we are capable of living. Mm. And the goal is to make those two lives the same. And I realized just sitting here like a mad scientist in a laboratory wasn't really doing much for me. I needed to start taking these ideas from my head to the real world. And so that's what made me so obsessively focused on execution.
That's awesome. And after the show, I'm going to share this template. Shout out to Jamie J. He's a friend. He first created it. We read the 12-Week Year in the mastermind that I invest in myself as a participant. And that so transformed my life, Kwame, that, you know, I'm really interested in productivity. And as a former school administrator, I know how much is expected of the leader in a local school. Yet a lot of times superintendents just add more and more and more, right? And they don't take anything off their plates. And it's just crazy and maddening to think about what somebody needs to get done. And so a lot of people ask me, and they've seen how I work, how do you get so much done, Danny? You know, and when I was doing this as a side thing, pumping out content through Better Leaders while still serving a school at a high level, you know, how do you do it? And part of it is, I guess, learning the mental scaffolding that I need, the systems and processes to be even more effective within whatever role I occupy. And so I'm going to share that template with you. And then listeners, if you're interested in that 12-week template, plus all the crazy bonus content, you know, there's tons and tons of it that we go through in the productivity course I have. Just check it out, betterleadersbetterschools.com. Hop on the email list and I'll make sure that you get, you know, those resources. So that'll be pretty cool. That took my productivity to like, I want to come up with an awesome metaphor on the fly, but it gave it steroids for sure. And essentially it's a spreadsheet where you can align, you know, those three personal and professional goals with your weekly tactics, with your daily strategy. But then the simple thing of, you know, Brian Moran talks about the importance of keeping score. And so like a to-do list, you are putting an X by the tasks you complete. And since it's a spreadsheet, I have all these equations that calculate your weekly score. And then on the dashboard, the first tab page, you can see your performance week by week. And if it's improving, if you're maintaining, if you had a bad week, so you can retool and revisit, and then your overall percentage of completed tasks past that 12 weeks. So I think you'll like it a lot, and I know the listeners will too.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to getting into that.
So I know we're recording this January, this is getting released in July, and you're working on a book. So it's a tough question to ask, but hopefully the book will be out, you know, by the time this releases, and we'll definitely promote it when it comes out. But tell me more about this book you're working on.
Yeah, so the book is most likely going to be called Finding Confidence in Conflict, which is the same name as the TED Talk. And what I've realized in my time doing the podcast, from reaching out to listeners around the world and surveying them, is that they're really not too concerned or interested about the strategy behind negotiation, the X's and O's, like I like. They're more interested right. about their personal, psychological, and emotional barriers to engaging in these conflicts. And so what I've realized is that with old negotiation literature, we've been giving recipes to people who are afraid to get in the kitchen. And so with this book, it's going to be geared toward focusing on teaching people how to overcome that anxiety, that fear, and generate the confidence they need to engage in these difficult conversations. And then at the end, give some tools that people can use, simple, easy to implement tools that you can use in every single one of these discussions in your life. So the first goal is to empower people and then give them tools they need to get things done in these difficult conversations while strengthening the relationships at the same time.
I love that. And it's other focus too, if I heard that correctly, which I didn't necessarily expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a bit of both. So first it's looking on the inside, focusing on your barriers to engaging in the conversations, and then focused on the other person, where we can actually put these tools into action in a way that strengthens relationships. Because the thing is, people often look at conflicts as something that should be avoided, something that should be, you should run away from, something that's scary. But really, when you break it down, conflict is an opportunity. Conflict between two people is a signal that there is an issue. And now that you've recognized this signal, you should move toward it, because now you have the opportunity to repair and strengthen the relationships that are valuable to you. And now on the other side, it might be a signal that, and then you go in and investigate through engaging in conflict in this progressive, productive type of way. And then you realize that the relationship is not worth saving. Mm. And through conflict, you can investigate and see which relationships are beneficial and can be improved and should be improved, and which relationships ultimately should be left behind. Either way, you end up in a better position.
Love it. And any tips or tricks in terms of approaching conflict when you don't like it? You know, so many of us are scared of it. Use that metaphor of people that don't even want to, you know, come into the kitchen to start cooking. What are some ways mm-hmm. we can get more comfortable with the tension that conflict produces?
Yeah, the tools that I would suggest first are, it's a three-part process. And the book has approximately 0 words at this point, so it might change by July.
Okay.
But so the first, what we do is we acknowledge feelings. So think back to my interactions with Kai, my son. We acknowledge the feelings that they have. The second part is we engage in something that I like to call compassionate curiosity. And this is the thing that I outlined in the TED Talk, where we are guided by compassion and we are curious to figure out what is going on in their world. What issues are they facing? Why do they believe what they believe? And that's where we utilize the open-ended questions. And then the last part is, once we have an idea of what's going on, now we have a better perspective, a more holistic understanding of the situation. Now we engage in part 3, which is collaborative problem solving, joint problem solving. We work with them to figure out possible solutions to this issue. And this is contrary to what people often think, where it's us versus them. But really what we want to do is we want to create an atmosphere where this doesn't feel so much like a negotiation, but a joint brainstorming session where we're actually working together to address the issue in a way that could possibly strengthen the relationships and better the scenario.
And I know you shared a resource with me that you want to give away to the listeners, some type of guide. Can you unpack a bit what people can expect when they go out and grab it?
Yeah, so this is the ultimate negotiation guide. It is probably about a 17, 19-page guide that outlines the 3 most important characteristics of effective negotiators, and it has our 3 most popular negotiation guides. So it has a salary negotiation guide, an everyday negotiation guide, and a conflict resolution guide. And so with negotiation, oftentimes people fail to prepare. You go into these conversations and you essentially freestyle. That's not the best way to do it. So this gives you a systematic way to prepare for your negotiations or any difficult conversation you're going to have, so you feel more prepared and you feel more confident in the conversation.
So there's this quote by Tony Robbins that quality questions create a quality life. Successful people ask better questions, and as a result, they get better answers. What's one question you wish that school leaders would more frequently ask?
I wish school leaders would ask, how can we teach our children to resolve conflicts with each other more effectively? And so the purpose of that question is, a lot of times teachers are the referees. We go in and we figure out ways to resolve conflict ourselves. But I think the world would be a better place, our schools would be a better place, if we are more intentional about equipping our children with the skills, the emotional and cognitive resources necessary to resolve their own conflicts, because that's going to be something that they're going to need to do in the real world. So the earlier we start, the better off they'll be.
All right, I've been going easy on you, Kwame, and I've been waiting to ask you this question ever since that sparring session you put me through. But here's another time to be honest too, like your wind down routine. I'm curious what you would consider your worst leadership mistake and what you learned from it.
I think one of my worst leadership mistakes, actually, interestingly enough, comes from the realm of conflict resolution. I remember in law school is like you're swimming with the shark. You know, everybody yeah. wants to gain power in their little sphere. And so I was the president of this organization. There was a faction, a vocal minority of people who were really unhappy with the way the organization was run from last year, and that vitriol was turned toward me. And so instead of being more intentional about involving them in a meaningful way, I took a cowardly approach and handled most of the conversations via email. Now, the problem with this is that when it comes to negotiating, and most importantly, conflict resolution, the rule of thumb is that the more negative emotion that exists in the interaction, the more personal the communication needs to be. And so the reason is, when you are mad at somebody, you could read an email or a text message and it could say, what are you doing today? Pretty innocuous, but you could read it with the tone of, what are you doing today? It's like, oh, what? That's not what I meant.
Right.
And so since I was still coming into my own when it comes to having these difficult conversations, I took the cowardly approach and handled these conversations via email. And a lot of my emails were misinterpreted. I tried to bring people into the fold, but then once I got that resistance, I just decided to handle it via email. And so now what I would do is I would have first invited them into the conversation, like one-on-one, acknowledge their feelings, actually looked into it using compassionate curiosity to figure out what their concerns are. And then also finished it off by doing the problem solving and incorporating some of their ideas into what we did. And so I would say that was my biggest leadership failure. The year ended up being okay. The majority of the people had a good time, but I could have done a better job of bringing them into the organization and having them feel more involved in the process.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that example. At least you addressed it a bit over email, although I hear how you would have improved it. I had not a similar situation, but also, you know, there was a conflict and somebody on my team, the unhappiest person I've ever worked with, was just poisonous, but I knew I wasn't staying, right? And the roadway for my job, I knew I'd be transitioning really soon. So I chose to ignore this person. And on some level, I understand why I did it. I did it because I figured the time and energy it would take to try to help this person out or get to a place where she was a more positive contributor, you know, to the school community, that would take an incredible, incredible amount of energy that I didn't want to, waste is how I felt about it on her, to be completely transparent and honest. But the big mistake for me was that, you know, I didn't empathize and consider the staff's perspective and the people that would be staying behind, you know, and the people that she was hurting, even though personally I wasn't taking it, right? It wasn't changing how I viewed myself, although a lot of her remarks were meant to do that. But if you catch my drift, I took the cowardly approach as well. One, because I didn't want to invest that energy. And two, because it was the easy way out, right? To put your head in the sand and just say, okay, I'll be gone in 2 months, so forget about it.
Exactly. I think this is just a natural human tendency. The brain is geared towards avoiding discomfort. And that is our ultimate goal. That's why we don't do what we need to do, because we choose short-term comfort over long-term success. And oftentimes the path of least resistance leads to more resistance down the road. And the more proactive we are in engaging in these difficult conversations, the better off our relationships will be and the better off the overall situation would be, because we've dealt with this problem in its infancy before it grew up into a big, strong problem that could terrorize us. So yeah, but the thing is, it's important to recognize these things. And the only way you can improve upon a problem is admitting that there is a problem. And so I think both you and I, we learn from these mistakes, and hopefully we won't make the same ones in the future.
Yeah, I love that quote. The path of least resistance often leads to more resistance down the road. And it sounded like, you know, admitting the problem, that there's something that needs to be corrected, is a first step. I'm just curious, is there some type of motto or mantra that you say to yourself to get you pumped up for conflicts? Or is it just a thing like going to the gym? The more reps you put in, the easier it becomes.
Yeah, I would say the more reps I put in, the easier it becomes for me to take that first step, because fear feeds on time. The more time we give it without taking action, the bigger the fear will become. And so now I've created this habit where I still feel uncomfortable when it comes to conflict, but now I have this habit where I see conflict, I move towards it. See conflict, I move towards it. If it's a relationship I care about, I'm not just going to, you know, engage in conflict with my local barista just for the heck of it.
I said skinny latte.
Exactly. Probably not worth it. But yeah, when it's a relationship that I care about or a situation that I care about, once I get that trigger, it just becomes a habit. Because the anatomy of a habit is you have the cue, which is the trigger, the action, and then the reward. And so now what we need to do when we're creating this new habit is we have the same trigger, but we need to change our behavior and look for a new reward. And for me now, the reward is the peace of mind knowing that I did the right thing that comes after it. And now I know that with this new mentality, if I don't take the opportunity, and I'm saying this intentionally, the opportunity to engage in conflict, I'll feel bad about myself. I would have trouble looking myself in the mirror and saying that you did the right thing. So that feeling of regret is something that I want to avoid. And so it's that kind of mentality that helps me to engage in conflict more readily now.
Awesome. So we have two more questions. We're going to wrap up this podcast. The first one's a bit easier than the last. What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for just a day?
Conflict is an opportunity.
I agree. I already had that written in the show notes. So that's such a wonderful idea. And listeners, I hope that you really have embraced that, right? Conflict is an opportunity. So it's so nuanced and layered, right? Opportunity for yourself, self-exploration and personal growth, but also opportunity in terms of addressing problems, finding solutions, helping others grow, creating more value for your community. And I could go on and on. So I really enjoy that answer. And way to go, Kwame. You've made it to the last question. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
I would build a school that has a curriculum that includes emotional intelligence and conflict resolution and persuasion, because I really feel like that's an oversight when it comes to education. How often do we negotiate? If we define negotiation as any conversation where one or more of the people in the conversation want something, we're negotiating every day. How often do we engage in conflict? All the time in our personal and professional lives. But how many of us have taken a negotiation or conflict resolution class in K through 12 or through undergrad? Very few of us. Very, very few of us. And so I think that is one of the things that we can do to help our kids, would be to put in a curriculum that actually teaches them to resolve conflict effectively. That'll be my dream in a few, maybe 10, 15 years, to be able to create those curriculums for different schools. But for now, this idea will have to reside in this question, in my response to this question. That would be my priority.
Well, Kwame, thanks so much. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, it's cool. Because you said three things?
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess building off of that, it would be the curriculum and then also the opportunity to practice the curriculum, and also instituting a curriculum that focuses on fitness too, generating those good habits when it comes to personal health. So I wanted to at least give you three, because that's what you asked for.
Absolutely. Sorry, I jumped the gun there. That's sometimes the trappings of writing show notes as you're listening too. So I apologize. That's the one thing, as a fellow podcaster, watch out for that one.
Yeah. Oh, no worries. I do it all the time.
Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. Well, Kwame, thanks so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, the best way to get a hold of me is to just connect with me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is a great way to do it. Also, I give free coaching sessions to listeners. And I think people think I'm joking when I say that, but no, you can seriously just schedule right onto my calendar and we chat through any problem you have for about 20, 30 minutes. It's a fun way for me to connect with listeners. So actually, I'll give you a link so you can share that with your audience as well. So those would be the best ways to keep in touch. And I just encourage everybody to recognize and remember that fear grows on time. So the next time you see an opportunity to engage in conflict, don't take too much time. Just take a little bit of time to prepare and then engage. And you'll see your relationship start to flourish as a result.
And another way to think of that is that fortune favors the bold. So when it's time to engage in a conflict, you know, do your work, prepare, because Kwame wants you to do that. But definitely, you know, jump in and don't run away like I did with the conflict we talked about in this show. Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember, life is 10% of what happens to you, 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Danny and Kwame. Head out over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Kwame in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources like Kwame's popular TEDx talk, Finding Confidence in Conflict, or grabbing his ultimate negotiations guide, or best yet, signing up for a free strategy session. Kwame, thank you so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.